This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Who dressed me up like this? Am I really Batman? Did I go to a Phantom of the Opera concert?
That sounds like something I want to attend next year.
Yeah,
though.
Or is this some weird Eyes Wide Shut party I don't know about? Like, this could get this go a lot of ways.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian Luke Severide. And now your host. He's been practicing social distancing from his family long before the coronavirus ever hit. Deese Casillas!
Malam Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for coming around for another episode of the show. Like I mentioned on the Facebook page the other day, we're trying to get the show back to weekly. I'm actually getting a little ambitious, maybe going, I've got a lot of downtime. Might be trying to crank this thing up to 4 or 5 days a week, actually. This is how smart I am. I just realized we can actually do this show via Zoom. I don't need people in my goddamn studio. Fucking technology, man. The magic of the internet. So no Sophie, no Jeremy here. It's going to be mostly one-on-one shows moving forward. They'll occasionally be here, but that's, you know, when it does, just it's a special treat. Speaking of special treats, right now, via Zoom, all the way from Tacoma, Washington, we have comedian, my buddy, Luke Severide. Luke, how you doing, man?
I'm well. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm hanging in there, man. I'm feeling good. I feel like America won. We beat the quarantine. We did it.
Yeah, man. That's what happened. Yeah, we beat the quarantine because we stopped doing the quarantine.
We just do what we did in most wars and just quit. We just kind of peter out, and then we're like, I think we won. I think that means we won.
I beat my herpes because I stopped taking my herpes medication.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it works, right? The only losers are every girl I date after that.
I'm feeling optimistic.
Yeah, that's true. Just as good as dating and STD life goes. So how you doing in all this? It's been weird, especially weird for comedians for a lot of reasons, I think. And I'm looking forward to talk to you as well as other comedians about this. We're so social and well, in general, having to be out and kind of this need to be seen and do what we do, and also just the addiction of being on stage, man. How's it? How have you been handling that the last couple months?
I'm doing okay now.
Yeah.
that initial forced cold turkey was not, I was not looking forward to that.
Yeah.
That was an abrupt change. I mean, I'm sure everyone went through a version of this, but like your social life was just basically just killed, taken out of the knees.
Right.
And I didn't realize, I mean, I kind of like all comics always just joke. You're like, oh, stage, I need the stage, like that. But like, as soon as you don't have it, it really messes with like your routine. Like,
sure.
You get used to having that dump of endorphins, that sense of purpose, because I don't know about you, but I write a lot on stage. So
yeah,
to write jokes, which is like my favorite thing to do, I need to be on stage to like feel out the joke and then see where my brain goes. And like, while I'm in that moment in the adrenaline, and to not have that, you're just like, okay, I guess I can't do any of the things I spent the better part of a decade working on.
Sure. Yeah. Screw that. I don't need that anymore. Well, it's such a weird thing. You can't even dump. It's, you know, how did it affect your, even just the way you think in your day-to-day process? Because I know for me personally, you know, it's a way of processing my thoughts, even in my week. You know, when you go up and do a couple open mics, you're getting kind of what you've built up throughout that week and your ideas, and not only just creating jokes, but also kind of a release of inner tension, even, you know. So was that part of it, trying to, you know, finding new ways to cope and deal with just your own kind of inner thoughts?
Well, I definitely drank a lot more than I was previously. I was worried about getting high because I was like, sometimes getting high makes me anxious.
Sure.
And I was like, I don't need more of that.
Right.
I feel like just everything already produces enough. So yeah, I just drank a lot, played some more music, started playing my bass again, which is good. Another outlet, but I mean, nothing really could fill that void.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very unique like live performance. Because I've played music live before and everything like that, and it's definitely a rush, but like comedy live performances, like when you know that it's that tightrope where you're like, this could fail or this could succeed. And when it succeeds, you're just like, yep, I did that. Like,
right.
It's very, sounds very egotistical, cause it is.
Yeah.
but it's a validating thing. It makes you go, oh, okay, I did my job, I'm good. And then just, I didn't have that. So I was like, I guess I'll write some sad bass lines.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a thing that's deserving to be egotistical, though, in a sense, I think, because in a band, for instance, like you mentioned, you're in a band, you're in a group, there's other people. Even if you're not 100% doing your part of what of that combination of the band, it doesn't mean it's failing completely. There's other people kind of picking up slack or that can cover up those mistakes. If you're making a mistake on stage, there's no one else there to, you know, cover up the fact with like a sweet guitar riff or something, you know, or like a guitar solo or anything. It's just you. So if you can nail it out of the park, you know, that's something to be, I mean, you know, that's, you did it yourself.
Oh, totally. Totally. It's definitely feels more like it was me versus them, and then I won.
Right.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
I say that, but also after every single set, I can tell you the dozen things that I could have done differently to improve the
set.
Oh,
well, I think that's the marker of a real artist who's, you know, passionate about their craft. Anytime anyone gets off stage is like, that was a great set, nailed it. I'm like, ah, dude, you're not working hard enough to. I've never had a set that I loved. You know, I've had set that I'm really? Like, oh, that was good. I'm like, I mean, yeah, there's ones I like better than others, but I've never been like, there's always something, you know, I've never had one where I'm like completely satisfied, I guess I should say, not loved. I've had ones I love, but not where I'm like, ah, yeah, that was nothing could have been better.
Yeah. I've been actively trying to, undercut that, like that voice, that perception, because it's like, what's the point of doing any of this if we never allow ourselves to be at least momentarily happy about the thing?
Oh, then we're not funny anymore, right? Once you're happy.
That's bullshit. As long as you're not doing every set, every single time you do a set, you're just like, crushed it, don't need to change, already perfect.
Sure.
Yeah, then you're not going to be funny. But But if you have a good set and you get the jokes and they work, and maybe it wasn't perfect, but you at least be like, yo, man, that's going in the right direction.
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah. No, I definitely you have to be self-aware enough to know when something is working. Because, you know, if everything sucks, then, yeah, you're never getting any better. You're just doing it all. Why are you even continuing? But, yeah, to be hard enough on yourself also to have that desire to want to make it better and find those little, even 1% that can, you know, be changed or altered and make it a little bit better.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I've been trying to be more aware of, especially in the last couple months, is that there's so little that's in my control. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming in a lot of other people's lives that we have so little that's in our control. And that can be overwhelming. Like, so many things are out of our hands. I'm sure most people listening to your podcast, no offense, Deez, but they're fucking peasants. We're at the whim of whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe I got put on furlough. Maybe I just completely got let go. Or maybe I'm stuck at my job as an essential worker, feeling at risk every single day, but I have to make money because I can't file for unemployment. I can't just walk off the job site. I will make no money. Like, so you have to, not have to, but I think it's helpful to look at the things in your control and then see, make incremental changes and then be aware of it and be, let yourself feel happy about it. I started therapy earlier this year. I'm pretty sure it shows.
It's working.
I'm talking
working.
Out my ass like as if I'm yeah. a fucking yeah, complete person.
No, it's good. Just start wearing a scarf, get a little pipe and you'll be fine.
I forget who told me this, but they're like, dude, you're just like how I am on stage. They're like, you're just like a six pack away from becoming a motivational speaker. I don't know if they meant a six pack of beer or a literal six pack abs. Either way,
it
dude,
could
I'll
be
probably
both.
Talk way more.
It could be both. Therapy. I think I started therapy last year, man. I think it was a great thing for me personally. But I quit drinking too a little over a year ago. So that was, and then you got to feel emotions and things that you never felt in a long time. And it's like, oh God, these fucking things, what do I do with this?
Yeah. They're a lot sharper when you haven't been, weighing them down with a lot of liquids.
Yeah. You have to actually they make you look at them and actually think about them and you feel, you don't have a way to kind of dull them a little bit. It's just all right there. And the nice thing is, when you stop drinking, all the feelings come back all at once. It's not incremental either. They're just all just a dump truck of shit. And then remembering, and then you're like, I'm like, God, I haven't done this in 20 years. I got to start from scratch here.
I watched your Facebook during this time and it was a lot more active than usual.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. My brain went in weird ways and weird places, and I just kind of let it explore and see what happened. And honestly, I got some good stuff out of it. Things, you know, different thought processes, and helped me write some different stuff. My first few months of sobriety was I probably wrote more prolifically than I did in a long time. So, you know.
Well, you found a new outlet for that energy.
Yeah, it turns out I'm ADD when I'm not hungover half the day.
Perpetually hungover.
Yeah. So with writing and stuff, how have you been able to mine anything during this time, or how have you found writing comedy for you to be during this quarantine?
I've definitely found it more difficult.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I have spent a lot of the time just being bummed. And sure. I'm not particularly creative when I'm bummed. I've kind of already spent a good chunk of my time being like, here's all these sad sack jokes. And I'm like, I'm kind of over the self-deprecating, the down on yourself sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be like all that my brain would want to go to. And I'm like, but, I don't know. I've been working on more things lately, you know, eating healthier, stopped drinking this month. Which I hate the cliche of, but it's just like, as soon as you stop drinking, your life usually improves a little bit.
It's weird how that works, right?
Well, I think it directly applies to the people that just drink constantly. Like,
sure.
If you're drinking a little bit on the weekend or something like that, or every now and then, like, you don't need to quit. But if you're like 4 out of 7 nights of the week, you're at least, you know, half a dozen drinks deep. you're going to be tired.
It definitely makes a difference. Yeah. Well, and that's unfortunately with, you know, doing comedy, and if you're active enough, as you were, you know, you're out four to five nights a week, if not more, and you end up, you know, you're at places late at night, you're having a couple drinks, you know, you start hanging out with the crew, and then next thing you know, it's you've been drinking all night, and then that's it's pretty easy to fall into that.
Things are cheap. And I don't like passing up on a deal. And if someone's like, here's free drinks, you're like, ah, let's. Oh,
God. Yeah, don't go to waste.
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah. There's bums dying of DTs on the street. We can't let this go to waste.
Dude, it totally makes sense how many like old comics are either like just still tying it off every single weekend or they're completely sober. Cause it's like, you can't. Sure. It takes too much energy to like toe that line to be like, well, I'll have a couple drinks Friday and then none Saturday. I had none Thursday. That'll be fine.
Right. You know, yeah.
You know, just every night.
It's a weird thing about comics and impulse control that I think don't go hand in hand very well. Crazy how that works.
Yeah. And then your brain's on fire after the show and you're like, I know how to make it so I can sleep.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, people who are just reasonable human beings are generally don't do comedy.
That's true.
That's one of the things that encouraged me to quit drinking is listening to a podcast with Theo Von was talking to another comic who's also sober as Theo Von is. And, you know, just the kind of the consensus of like, yeah, when I quit drinking is kind of when things started going in the right direction for me. Like, you know, I wasn't getting hammered every night. I was focusing on things a little more. And I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Like, you know. Weird how you put that time into something that matters. It's gonna become more successful. So,
yeah, totally.
So writing wise, you found it a little more difficult. I mean, obviously, being able to work, you can't really work material. But I mean, also the lack of being able to kind of live a life. You know, I think that's where people draw obviously a lot of comedy from. There's not day to day antics essentially to even draw inspiration from.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing basically an iteration of the exact same day every day for the last 2.5 months. Like, I just wake up, I maybe mess around on my computer for a little while, I go and exercise in some capacity.
Yeah.
And then I play some video games or I watch something and then maybe, I don't know, write a little bit, but it's the same thing over and over again. I do some yoga, I go get high. Right. Go run some more. I don't know. It's just like, wow, dude, it sounds hilarious. And also, I already had a lot of material about those things because I am a boring person.
Can already nailing that down. My yoga, I had a 20-minute yoga set already. And so I mean, what have you been doing to try to stay busy? I know is it just kind of Groundhog's Day, same thing over and over?
Kind of, man. I got a weekly online streaming show that starts tomorrow, actually, or Wednesday, May 27th at 7 p.m. Been working on building up to that, so that'll be a good thing to have. And then just kind of getting back in the idea, like just trying to figure out how to work on things.
Sure.
Because I don't have a podcast. I've never been much of I edit videos. I make online content like that. I've always wanted to, and I'm always like tried to do it, but it just doesn't excite me.
Sure, so
I'm like,
sure.
We need to figure out something. Because who knows how long this is going to last, or if this is just going to become a part of the things we need to do.
Right.
Not need to do, but like the way to keep tabs on fans and to keep them interested is to have like, once a week you live stream a show. And then maybe that is the lead up to your weekend shows. Who
sure.
knows?
Yeah. And I think you're right. And honestly, that's kind of where my head has been at. I think it is kind of in on the internet is where a lot of people are going to have to survive if they want to survive. Live shows are going to be fewer and farther between. Spots are going to be less. There's going to be less people at shows. So people are going to be turning to online to get their content. If you can produce something regularly, I think it's now's the time to capture that audience. And if you can do it and move forward, you're just going to build. What's the what's the show? Every Wednesday you want to do it. It's going to be so 27th. That'll be tonight, actually, as this airs. Magic of post-production. Tonight as this airs. And where can people find that?
The event page is being made tonight through Facebook. If you find me, Luke Severide on Facebook, I'll be posting it a bunch through Money in the Bank Productions. Mm-hmm. That's on Facebook page. It's a crew of people that I just came across. They're working on making a bunch of shows. Every day of the week, there's some live streaming show at night because can't produce live comedy shows like we used to. So we might as well be doing something. It's a variety of things. Mine's a little bit weed inclined because that's who I am as a person.
Sure.
I always enjoy talking to comics, getting a feel for them, asking them fun stories, and then them getting a little bit high, and then we just kind of fuck around. It's a game I used to play on shows that when I did them live, it would be like, have audience members text in a time or message in a time they just got way too high. And I just loved reading through those.
Sure.
And
getting
off of it. Cause it's always just it is amazing how many people all do the exact same dumb thing, but just in so many different variations.
Yeah.
I just think getting like too high on weed is such an innocuous dumb thing to do. It's like doing a backflip into a safety net,
right? It's kind of adorable, but kind of
it's endearing. It just makes me feel like a teenager again, just all this stupid stuff. So yeah, it's fun. And then that's just the first iteration of the show. Who knows where it's going to evolve, because we're going to want to have a lot of interaction with the audience as much as we can. But yeah, it's something to do, man. I'm it's from the convenience of my own bedroom, and I get to have posters hanging behind me.
Sure.
Wall mount my base, so everyone's like, "Oh my god, what is that?" You're like, "Oh, you mean the thing that I intentionally put behind me?"
Oh, I forgot that was there. That old thing. Yeah, let me just slap a little.
There's a couple stories.
Let me just play a chord for you real quick. What's the name of the show then?
It's called Wait What?
Wait What?
Yeah.
Wait What?
Show names are hard, man, and that's also just a thing I say often. Do you ever catch yourself just on stage and realizing you have little phrases that you use?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And whenever I was reading these stories and something like bombastic was said, or someone was terrible at spelling, I would always just be like, "Wait, what?" And then go back. And so, yeah, it's just kind of sums it up. Just the absurdity of the stupidity that we all subject ourselves to, getting a little bit too high. And also, even doing it sober. We're all doing dumb shit all the time.
No, tell me about it. Story of my life, man. I got sober. It didn't stop me doing dumb things. That's for goddamn sure.
Do you worry about losing your ability to be a person in this time?
I don't know if I was ever a person to begin with. So I'm kind of like a robot a little bit. I always say I don't really have a needle. Like I don't get super excited. I don't get super low. I'm always just kind of, that's why I was good at I used to race cars and I used to box and stuff like that. And time literally slows down. It's just kind of nothing excites me. Cause I'm dead inside. I'm not sure it's better or worse for me. I always said I could probably survive on a desert island by myself forever and be fine. People is cool. No people is cool. I'm just kind of all right. Then whatever's happening is kind of happening.
Sounds like you've been handling the last 2 months really well then.
Yeah. I'm also a psychopath though. But I mean, it sounds like, are you kind of feeling that you're having trouble connecting with people when you go out in public or?
Yeah. I mean, just the social interactions. I'm I never crushed it. But you do comedy for long enough, you figure out how to be charismatic and just make some small talk here and there. Yeah. So you just walk past someone, they say something, you say something, they laugh. You're like, ha, ha, crushed it.
Finger guns, nailed it.
But, oh man, just. But now, man, I'm like, oh, it's aimed the guns at my fucking face.
Well, also it's people's reaction too, though. I think it's part of it because everyone's so cautious of where that person's level of comfort with interaction is too. For me, I'm no masks, hang out, hug. I don't give a shit. Other people are bubble boy in a hyperbaric chamber every night, go back to the sarcophagus and their iron lung and take a bath to try and heal themselves. But and everywhere in between. So you have to like navigate everyone else's social expectation too.
Yeah, it's a, I really think just normal day-to-day human interactions are going to have a lot more layers on top of them.
Yeah.
A lot more just like feeling people out to figure out where everyone's line is.
Sure.
Because, I mean, I'm not super comfortable just hanging out with people, but it's like, whatever, if you're going to do what you're going to do, you're going to do what you're going to do. But it's just like, how do we, where do we go from there? Like 6 months down the road, there's still going to be people that are like going to want to wear a mask, mm-hmm. that aren't going to want to, that are going to be upset if you're in close proximity to them. Like the amount of people that are like, one thing that makes me a little bit happy is that now if like someone crosses the street so they don't have to walk past me, I'm like, oh, they're not scared that I'm like some bigot or like a threat that's going to like assault them or something.
Yeah.
They're worried about a virus. They and
just,
maybe that.
They just think you're Typhoid Mary. They think you're carrying a deadly virus. I'm not sure that's better, but it's, you know, it's a lateral move at the very least.
Either way, there's more things for me to be like, oh, there's maybe a legitimate worry instead of just being like, well, fuck you. I didn't choose my haircut either.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the white cape was a bad choice today. I don't know.
Yeah, man, just, but every day, come on, guy. It's my thing. I'm taking it back.
Right, yeah, bringing it back. I'm the white knight. It is weird the way people are interacting, yeah, and trying to figure out how to interact with everyone. I do think that this is probably going to end up being the norm. It's just going to keep happening, and then eventually we're going to forget why it started, and it's just going to be normal, you know. It's like taxes, you know. The government's like, hey, 2% increase on gas tax so we can build this freeway, and then the tax never goes away and the freeway is kind of shitty, and you're like, all right, I guess that's just the way it is now.
Yeah, I don't know, man, but at the same time, there's a lot of pushback on this. A lot of people see it as like a sign of like how American and badass you are by like not wearing a mask.
Sure.
And kind of like, I don't do that pussy shit. And you're like, dude, it's not, it's a safety precaution.
Yeah.
The off chance you're asymptomatic, so you don't pass it on to someone who then in turn is asymptomatic and gives it to their grandma.
Right.
And
yeah.
The reason their grandma dies. Like it's, I don't know. I don't see that as that unreasonable of a thing to think, but also like, is that just going to be how everyone is? Is everyone going to be wearing masks? I think there's going to be a percentage of the population that for sure is always going to be wearing masks from now on when they're in public.
Well, I mean, if you look at in, you know, China, especially and other Asian countries, that's kind of very typical of their culture when they're sick or just, you know, during flu seasons and things, they culturally, they just wear masks as kind of a like, you know, hey, let's not spread this around type thing. It's not absurd. It's not, I mean, it makes sense. I think stubborn Americans who think they're too, you know, too good for it. I mean, I've been gallivanting. I hang out with people. I generally don't wear a mask.
Gallivant?
I'm a professional gallivanter.
Goodness
you
gracious.
You know what? You got to do what's in your heart. You know, some people were born to gallivant. Some people were born to sing. You do what you do. But you know, when I was in California, I mean, you had to wear a mask everywhere. I brought a mask. I'll wear it fine. It doesn't bother me to have to wear one. You know, I understand businesses that want to mandate you do. What I don't understand is the businesses that mandate you can't. There's businesses actually that are like, you can't wear a mask in our business. And I'm like, that's kind of a dick move. Like if someone is uncomfortable or like feels like they want to wear a mask, that's their choice. That kind of like shitty bravado of like, oh, come on, man. I get if you don't want to wear a mask, but don't force other people not to.
And are they using the excuse of like, you could be a robber or something. Like, are you going to do something? Is that their excuse? Or they're just like, nope. You went that way, so we do the opposite. Because that is
there's probably a combination of both. You know, I'm sure some businesses are. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm not sure. It's probably a little more serious on your side of the state, Spokane. Although being the second biggest city in Washington State is a cow town, very small town mentality. And, you know, the bravado of like, oh, we don't need this and goddamn liberal Inslee and, you know, this is a fake virus and this and that, you know.
Yeah. So how many of those people that say it's a fake virus know anyone who actually works in a hospital?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I have a friend who does, and I've like gone out of my way to keep like be like, hey, like we're good friends, but also I've actively just been like, hit me up whenever you got a chance, because I'm curious, because I also am like, well, what is the news? And she's like, yeah, it's real as shit. Like,
yeah,
it's stupid. It's yeah. People are like, it's a fake virus. You're like, no, it's not. It's real. It might not be as insane as everyone's trying to make it out to be, because that's what the news does.
Sure,
but it's real and it's a threat, and you should be careful. And like, yeah, like she. If, something happens, like she quarantined for like a while until she got a test back because she didn't want to give it to her 1-year-old and husband if she hadn't already.
Well, so. I think the biggest thing for me is, again, I'm not that concerned about my safety personally because I don't value myself that much, but I do respect other people's worry about their health. So like, you know, if it makes them feel more comfortable to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. Sure. It's not that big of a deal to me. I am confused by a couple things, like the inconsistencies of the way people are attempting to protect themselves. Like at my local Safeway, not to brag, but I go to Safeway, got a club card. I got Safeway money. It's just the closest shop, Safeway or grocery store to my house. They covered the pin pads for your debit card, you know, pin pads for your card, in plastic. But they don't change or clean the plastic. They just put plastic over the plastic buttons. And that's like, and people are like, oh, perfect. And I'm like, everyone's still just touching that now. And that, you know, it's this veiled sense of like, you know, it's like at the airport, you take off your shoes now. And because one guy tried to get through with a bomb and we were all like, ah, safety. Like, yeah, not really.
Well, I mean, I've been at a Safeway, which I also go to.
Oh, all right. Okay. Coming back at me now. Okay.
All right, dude. I use my parents' home phone.
Yeah. Now. Next thing you tell me, you don't buy Safeway Select brand. Okay. All right.
I go off brand on occasion. I'm feeling bougie. I've seen them like wipe it down in between.
Sure. Okay.
I think it's in some places, or just depends on the worker. I mean, like, you know, you've been a lazy ass at your job before.
Yeah.
Like imagine 40 hours a week wiping down the same keypad.
Sure. After,
yeah, like people are going to slack. I don't know. It's just the problem I have with that sort of like rebuttals, not that that's what you were doing, but like that people point out one not perfect aspect of a thing to cancel out all of the effort. Like this one thing isn't perfect, so all of it is bullshit. And you're like, no, these are steps to deter a thing. The way I see it is that anytime you go out and do any sort of interaction, it's Russian roulette.
Yeah.
There's a chance, but like maybe there's a lot of barrels to the gun and very few bullets. But other times, let's say I go to a grocery store, it's past capacity, no one's wearing a mask. I'm like, well, there's a lot of barrels in this gun, but there's also a lot of bullets. So yeah, that's just how I see it. And if people doing that, wearing a mask might minimize the amount of bullets in the gun, or wiping it down on occasion. Because even if, with that plastic cover, they could wipe it down every 5 people, and that'll be a lot more effective than if they just left it plain and then wiped it down every 5 people, because that plastic cover makes it easier to clean.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess I've never seen any of them even like, I was there the other day, and the no cash back button, you know, with a red no cash back button you press on the screen, was actually worn through the plastic. So it'd been on there for so long. Like, so this is not being changed or really, it's just kind of there. The effort is one thing. There's just weird inconsistencies, where it's like, I had an interaction with a lady at a grocery store the other day. She was an elderly lady. So I was walking my cart out to the parking lot, and she was coming my way, and I kind of gave her some distance because she had a mask on. So I'm like, all right, you know, maybe, you know, she's uncomfortable. So I kind of moved a little farther away in the, you know, lane. And then she says something to me, and I can't really hear her through the mask. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And she says something again. She comes closer. I'm like, I can't hear you. And she says again, she goes, oh, I'll take that cart. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I like give her my cart. But she had a mask on, but like no gloves. And she like, so she grabs the cart from me and then just off she goes. I'm like, are you afraid of the virus or not, lady? Like just grabbing a cart from a stranger. Like, I'm like, I don't know. Or people who wear gloves all day, but don't change them and then still are touching their face. I'm like, the gloves aren't the thing that they protect your hands. But then if you're touching other things, you're.
I mean, but are you actually surprised that people are inconsistent and idiotic at the same time? Like it's.
No, it's not surprising. It's just, it's so funny when, you know, someone is so like adamant. It's consistent with human behavior. It just still is always is so funny to me. It's like, are you afraid of this or are you not afraid?
No, they
of
just
this?
Want to do the smallest amount of effort for the maximum amount of comfort. Sure. I wore a mask.
Yeah, sure. Right.
I prayed this morning. I don't need to check my blind spots when I'm changing.
Yeah,
lanes.
Yeah.
That's just
right. I bought condoms. I don't need to wear them. I bought condoms. I don't need to wear them. Got them. They're there.
They're there.
Yeah.
I had a friend who literally never looked behind when she was backing up her car because she prayed. And I was like,
you're kidding. That was her answer.
Yeah.
She God's will
backed up into anyone as far as I know. So in her mind,
She's 100% right now. She's shooting 100.
And I wanted some poor soul to jump on that grenade just to prove that God is not, that's not how God works.
This is what I love. I love to think that God's up there. He's fielding a number of phone calls every day, right? And you know, there's the kids in Africa starving with Zika virus, and there's, you know, the fires in Australia, and you know, people dying of coronavirus. And she's like, Hey God. just a reminder, don't let me back up in when I wildly exit my driveway today. I need you to be in charge of that, because God forbid I use my eyes that you gave me to actually look.
In her defense, the back glass on her, I think it was a Nissan Rogue, was very small.
Oh, sure.
To be out of.
Yeah.
So it was like, but she's like, doesn't even need it, just goes and goes. It's all fine.
That's amazing. That's Nissan's fault. You know, God, yeah. There goes the Asians fucking us again. Jesus Christ. yeah.
The sneaky ways, which is stereotypical and
that's it. Yeah. I think my listeners are used to it.
my racist listeners like this. Yeah. Stuff.
I say the worst shit all the time. Yeah, I always say I make jokes about running for mayor for Spokane, and I always say that like my plan is just to run a smear campaign on myself. like that.
I mean, that could just be fun to see.
Yeah, right. You know, I've got a whole commercial planned out where I just start playing audio clips from any moment from any episode of my podcast. I'd be like, "Would you want your mayor to say this?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, shit, I said that."
I mean, that could just be a good promo for like a weekend at a comedy club.
That's true, right? Yeah. Listen, you could really go to any episode, any timestamp, and you're probably going to find something that's going to offend a group of people. And you know, I live with that burden. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's all right. I mean, you know, after 6 years, I just deal with it. So comedy is starting to come back a little bit, you know, not only online, but, you know, the clubs, one of the clubs, you know, you and I traditionally work for pretty regularly, as well as other ones, are kind of in the next few weeks beginning to open their doors a little bit. How do you, you know, with about 30% capacity, 6 feet apart and people, I mean, you're talking about rooms going from 360 people to 120 people and farther apart. What's your thoughts on that kind of room as opposed to, you know, what we were dealing with before?
Well, I think the audiences are going to be hungry because it's more exclusive. Like you're one of 100 instead of one of, you know, 100 people sitting in a room that seats 250, 300.
Sure.
So that, like, and you will I don't know. I think audiences are going to like it. I think they're going to be excited about the experience of it initially. But they're also going to be way more on edge for, I think they're going to be, everything has gotten even more politicized. I think referencing anything about what is currently happening in the world is going to divide an audience.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, and I don't know, that makes me just kind of want to like, be like, I don't even want to comment on it. Cause what am I going to, I would need to work out the material, and how do I do that? Not in front of a live audience.
Yeah. Well, in like how, I mean, honestly, one of my biggest dreads in all this is going back to the first open mic and listening to 25 people have their hot take on the coronavirus and Tiger King. And I'm like, fuck, dude, I don't like, listen, you're not going to have the best one. I guarantee you, you're not going to have the best one. And everyone has had a compacted ass load of hearing about it. Like, I mean, I've written jokes on, you know, on Facebook and stuff about it, but there's zero I want to take to the stage.
Yeah, the only thing I want to take from this is I think it's going to inform the direction I take some newer bits.
Sure.
Like, but I don't want to write bits about this collective, like, forced retirement. We all, like, honestly, this, all the, like, this might be me running a premise by you right now. No, but, like, for me, it feels like a forced summer vacation where I'm, like, grounded.
Sure, like, yeah.
I can barely see my friends. Like, I can do whatever I want for the most part, but it's boring as shit. Like, that's just what it feels like. It's like, oh, the weather's nice. I guess I'll go hang out by myself.
Yeah.
I'll play some video games. I'll go jerk off again. All right, cool. I'll do some sit-ups. I clean up afterwards. I don't.
You don't go directly to the sit-ups jerk off?
I don't want to move what's on my belly around.
I imagine that with all that free time, it's got to be like a smokeless cigarette coming out of there now. Just like there's just nothing left, just talc powder.
I don't feel anything when I come besides sadness.
But that's been happening long before the coronavirus.
Okay. All right. One person one thing about yourself. Don't let it go.
Listen, just embrace it. It's okay. Be who you are, Luke. Don't let anyone tell you it's a bad thing.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. if anything, like you said, you're going to have a little perspective, but there's, I think a lot of, I don't think audiences are going to want to hear about it and hear someone's quirky take on how they spent the last 2 months. You know, I mean, you could allude to it, but if you're straight up talking about it, and again, no one's going to have the best take on it. You know, no one's going to have something that blows them away, and people are going to be, I mean, every day, all day, it's all they've heard about online, open Facebook, on TV. You know, you talk to, when you do see friends, that's all people talk about. You go to the store, people have masks. You want kind of a reprieve from that, I think.
Yeah. Well, and also like, look at it sort of like how, both Chappelle and Burr last year, both their specials, they talk about like outrage culture. Mm-hmm. And cancel culture and stuff like that. And both of them kind of had a similar take, mm-hmm. to an extent. And like, it's a thing that kind of permeates a lot of things, but not to the extent that this has affected everyone's life. And even those, like the people at the top of their game, their takes weren't that different.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much of an angle you take. I think there's going to be some really good jokes about the coronavirus that are stand-up bits, but I think there's going to have to be so much other substance around it.
Yeah.
It'll be used to inform a joke, but like, if you're just straight talking about a virus and being like, should you wear a mask? Shouldn't you're a hacky fuck. Like, it's already hacked before we have a chance of getting on stage.
Right. Oh yeah. It's fucked out before anyone has even had a chance to say one joke into a microphone about it.
Oh yeah. I know there's going to be so many terrible, terrible jokes. It's just going to be, I mean, it will be refreshing to find a new batch of hacky things. Like, I'll be like, oh, this is new. Yeah. It's new old that I hate.
Right.
Cool.
It's not just talking about masturbation anymore. He's talking about masturbation and the coronavirus. Yeah. Perfect.
Me 3 minutes ago?
Yeah. I was guilty also. It happens. That's not on stage. Come on, man. It's different.
We're better than that.
I'm better than nothing. That's for goddamn sure. The sidebar real quickly, you mentioned just because it made me think about a special. Well, actually, I got to see him live when he was at the club a while back. But Mark Normand's. Did you see Mark Normand recently?
I have not.
Do you like Mark Normand?
Yeah.
Okay. He, you should watch his most recent special. He had an interesting take on cancel culture. And, you know, when I got to see him at the club, November, December when he was here. Yeah, it was very, very good. It was unique and interesting coming from Mark Normand because it wasn't what I expected to hear from him. He's very funny and a great joke writer, but he's usually lighter, fair material. So anyway, yeah. I would check
in. You see, I like unique takes that make me go, oh, okay, I haven't really thought of it that way. If you're being redundant, I'm just kind of like bored.
Yeah, it's like, got it. Well, I mean, and it could have partly been, again, my surprise hearing it from Mark Normand. You know, hearing that from Chappelle, I'm like, yeah, of course he's going to talk about that, you know, the wildest thing he can come up with, because he's going to probably have one of the best takes you're going to find on it. That coming from Mark Normand was not what I expected at all. So yeah, he says some pretty interesting things. So the outside of club work and stuff like that, what about, I know you ran some independent shows, things like that. What are your thoughts on that? Where do you think that stuff stands for you or in general?
Well, it all depends on the venues. I've reached out to the places that I've, was working with before, and they seem on track. They still want comedy, so that's good. Mm-hmm. It just all depends on if they survive.
Yeah.
Which is looking good, but I think that is something I'm going to lean into, because Roy Wood Jr. wrote a article, about 2.5 months ago, basically when this was ramping up, just discussing how like it's going to be kind of crappy for comics, because these big, large acts are going to have to get into smaller and smaller rooms. So that means everyone goes, kinda
drops down
yeah. a level. And as a, you know, a bar headliner, occasional club headliner, club feature act, I mean, I'm not a hot commodity. There's plenty of other people that can fill the spot that I would be in. So I'm just kind of like, well, I should produce my own shows.
Yeah.
And do that, because I think it's really, I mean, you gotta work with what's in your control. And I think it's going to take a while for the entire comedy economy to bounce back, or whatever you want to call it, and back to where it was just a couple months ago. And so I'm like, well, might as well just produce my own things. But even in that, room capacity is going to be down. Who's to say how hungry people are to go see live shows in, like, you know, strange dive bar-y venues or stuff like that.
Right.
Like, what I don't want to pay comics little money. I want to pay them well, but I also don't want to lose money just to put on a show. But maybe that's what I'm going to have to do for a while.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I've struggled with too, is trying to figure out, you know, you with room capacity going down to 30 to 50%, somewhere in that realm, I assume. Yeah. I mean, what do? You same boat. I don't want to pay comics less. Do you double your ticket price, triple your ticket price? Where do you go to try to make up the money, to make it worth doing it? But you are right. I mean, it is going to be the independent scene is where you're going to have to make up the money, because, you know, yeah, very, very much so. Like what you were saying, Roy Wood said, everyone's dropping down. The guys who are used to doing, you know, arenas, stadiums, stuff like that, guests, you know, theaters, well, that's not really much of an option anymore. So, you know, they're going to probably drop down to clubs. So the guys that were, you know, bubble guys that were getting, you know, some headline work like you at clubs, you know, all of a sudden it's like, well, now we have these other options. But on the other side of that, there is the possibility with less capacity and being able to, maybe, you know, the clubs having less income, they may not have the ability to pay some of these acts. Sure. So, you know, not to you know, take some spirit as intended, but you're a cheaper weekend than other headliners. Oh. So, you know, that there may be opportunity to capitalize on that too, where they're like, well, you know, we don't want to spend $12,000 every weekend on a 12 to 50 grand or whatever on a headliner for 4 weekends in a month. So, you know, you can get, you know, headliners who are a little less expensive and they can still put people in seats. So it may pencil out in ways, really.
Yeah, it could. I mean, I hadn't really thought about that. I was being a bit too negative.
You're welcome.
I'm just trying to be as pragmatic as possible just to mentally prepare for something not going my way instead of just being hopeful or something. Because I don't know how your schedule was, but I was supposed to be on the road for an entire month starting in the middle of March.
Yeah.
The day the quarantine in Washington kicked in was the day I was supposed to drive to Pullman to headline a show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's done. And then I was going to do a whole tour through the Midwest and like down through Arizona and then back up. And I'm like, nah, all right, it's canceled.
Yeah.
I was excited for that. So I'm like, nope, everything's canceled and nothing is happy. Let's plan accordingly.
Yeah, I know. Definitely. What I really loved was March. I had some gigs the beginning of March, but I had backloaded that month. And literally the last 2 weeks of March, I think I had like 15 shows in the last 2 weeks and just all fucking all gone. And I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. That was like the, you know, I had done some other stuff the first 2 weeks to kind of like relax and get some other stuff done. And I'm like, oh, good. I'll just do all these shows and blah, blah, blah. And then nope, all gone. Yep. And, I just picked up a couple of the rooms and put a couple of things together and I'm just like, okay, well, yeah, now I guess I do none of this. And, we'll see what of these venues survive. So far I haven't heard any say that they're not going to, but that still could change.
Is that what you're thinking of doing on the other side of this, leaning into more producing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was already, luckily, you know, what Michael and I were doing for a while in producing our own shows, that was successful for us. I mean, we weren't blowing down doors of theaters every night, but we were, you know, it was monetarily successful. You know, we were out and it was good. So I can produce shows and I was kind of going that direction anyway. I mean, not to take away from the clubs that generously give us work when they don't have to, you know, 'cause they have lots of options. I like it better. I mean, the clubs are fun, but honestly, being on the road can wear you out. But, you know, as time has gone on, I'm sure you've experienced this too. You get better at producing your own shows. You figure out the money better. You figure out logistically and you figure out what works and you don't, you know, you don't take shittier gigs. You kind of, you do the ones you like and don't have to say yes to everything. And, so I was kind of ready to go that direction more anyway, just produce my own shows and go out on the road and take, find people that I want to take and do stuff. And, hopefully that can still happen.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't want to pile on and poo poo on clubs, but I mean, once you start, you produce some shows and realize what you can't, like what sort of money you can make.
Right.
And like how you pay comics, and then you do like a weekend at a club, and some clubs do treat you really well, but the pay is still kind of garbage, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have so much more overhead, but you're just like, if I was producing this show in my own room and had this many pay people show up and I ticketed it even less than this, like the headliner could make a crazy, the feature, like, it just makes you kind of, all right. So like, it's nice to have things in your control. Club work's there and that's great. But until you're like a headliner with like some solid credits, I think the money's just garbage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. It's, I mean, it's good filler and it's a good way to build, you know, build some fans and kind of figure stuff out and fill weekends when you don't have other options. But eventually, yeah, if you're not going out and getting it yourself, I mean, not to sound like a dick, but like I got to a point where, you know, I was turning down weekends from clubs. So I'm like, even when I didn't have something booked, 'cause like, they're like, hey, I'm like, well, you know what? I can figure out a weekend, you know, if it's 2 months down the road, I guarantee I can fill that weekend and do two shows over that weekend. that I produce and make the money I would being stuck at your club for three nights. You know, I'll make more than that. Yeah. And I kind of just started hedging my bets and it started working out. We'll see how if that's the case moving forward.
It changes yeah. everything up. And it's like, again, I want to reiterate in case anyone who runs a club or anything, I'm not shit, but it's like the pay has not increased in like two decades plus. Or so. It's just like, this is
it's actually decreased. Way. Really? It's yeah. It's decreased, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the trajectory it's going to be on for a while too, as like, hey, we're a lower capacity. We can't pay you as much. And you're like, cool. A waiter is going to make more than I did tonight.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's awesome.
That being said, I would love to work your room.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
Because that's how I make money.
Yeah. I think I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Travis Nelson, the other day, and he's coming to Spokane to do a show at the club. And he's going to stay with me while he's here. And I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, man, of course you can stay. And I go, he's like, do you have anything coming up? And I'm like, dude, I literally have zero shows on my calendar right now. Today, I got a weekend offered. So I got one weekend in July, I think. And that's it. That's literally the only thing I have concrete on my schedule right now. Hopefully, yeah, the smaller venues I work with, ideally Idaho and Montana, I do a lot of venues there. They're a little more lax. They've had a lot less cases. They, you know, they're a little more, Republican, so they don't believe in fake viruses. like goddamn 5G fake viruses. Yeah Democratic hoax. So
yeah.
They
yeah,
just
this really makes it everything so much easier for the Democrats.
Yeah, I know, right?
the amount of stories everyone is telling themselves to rationalize things. And I'm sure they can say the same about me, but it's just like, dude, like you think it's a fabrication because they don't like the guy in charge. So they're willing to torpedo everything just to get rid of a reality TV star.
It seems a little far-fetched. I mean, I'm not one to believe in or trust any politician or government much, but I'm also pretty pragmatic, so I'm always like, to what end? You know, why? Like, you know, okay, so yeah, it seems like a pretty extreme measure because they hate Trump. To create this fake virus or this pan, you know, make more hysteria about it than they can. Like, oh well, that whole thing of getting him out of office, you know, the impeachment didn't work. I guess we got to go to Plan B where we release the Chinese virus across the country.
Like, I'm saying the amount of blood that. Not saying that Democrats don't for sure. Their actions don't lead to people dying. But I'm saying, like, if they won't fight dirty in politics, do you think they'd fight dirty by releasing a pandemic or like faking one?
Right. Like, or facilitating it at least in some yeah. manner. I don't know.
Soft-handed pussies don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah, they don't have the guts. Goddamn Democrat. Grow some balls.
As a soft-handed pussy, goddamn, I wish we had some balls.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, that is inherently misogynistic, and I'm sorry.
Right.
But
listen,
I grew up in the suburbs. It's still in me. I'm working on it.
Well, the good news is you can have balls or not have balls. It's your choice, right? You can choose what you want to be.
Well, I mean, you can choose what you have.
Well, yeah, surgery exists too.
You can choose what you have as long as you have terrible insurance. Wait, no, as long as you have good insurance. Damn yeah, it! I don't know how to do jokes anymore, dude.
you do need an open mic. No, it's okay. We all
I got
do.
This new hot 10 minutes on the coronavirus. I think everyone's really gonna like.
Yeah, wrapping up with some Tiger King talk, and then did you watch Tiger King?
I did just because I wanted to write a joke no one else had written. I hate watched it because I literally would have rejoiced if at any point in time someone walked on screen and shot someone in the head. That dude that killed himself
yeah.
didn't do it on accident. He's like, I just have to get the fuck out of this documentary.
Right. I can't be involved in this anymore.
Oh, man.
But I mean, Isn't it wild that, like, in 1,000 years, I could never write something that crazy? And that's just reality. Like, that happened.
It did happen. And also, man, they left out a lot of stuff. There's a whole lot of things that weren't in there. Like, I've read some articles and stuff, like, following up on it. It's just, like, it's even worse, man. Like, just so many... It's just white trash with money and cameras in front of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw some tweet that said that the way America watched Tiger King is how the rest of the world watches America.
that's all too accurate, actually. Yeah,
like, we were excited and we mimicked it and we're like, that's great. But at the same time, they're like, if I'm ever like any of these people, shoot me now.
Yeah. Like, I think I said one time, I'm like, because people are like, oh, it's so unbelievable. It's so unbelievable. And I go, if you start any story with this meth addicted gay guy from Oklahoma City with a mullet, like, I will literally believe anything you tell me after that. Like, that, I'm like, I'm on board. That's too specific for you to be lying right now. That's just
specificity, man. you couldn't have because you couldn't have gotten that show greenlit. No one would buy into that story unless it was real.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well,
it would not have been nearly as popular if everyone was able to leave their house.
Well, and I think it was right place, right time. Yeah. It was that kind of shitstorm where they just, you know, people have nothing else to do. So you can binge watch this. And it's very easily, it's an easy thing to talk about, too. So, you know, everyone, once it kind of catches fire, there's so much fodder about, like, can you, because that's what it is. It wasn't so much entertainment as, like, it is unbelievable that these people exist, you know, and they all exist together, you know?
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, like, crazy is a magnet for other crazy, especially if they aren't crazy that's stationary. If they're crazy that seeks stuff out.
Yeah.
I mean, not to get all like, but like, reality TV is the reason we are where we are. The fact that we just want to pay attention to things. We want things to hold our attention is how we've gotten to the point that we've gotten. It's why the news is always exaggerating things. It's why everything is his ads. It's why we just love things that are bombastic. And then it always moves the needle a little bit further along to being acceptable. And I know I sound like an old fuck who's just like, you shouldn't be acting like that. But I'm like, yo, man, it is. I don't think it's benefiting us.
No.
At all, as a society or as a species at all.
Well, it sensationalizes things and creates, you know, I think the biggest thing with the news, the problem is when the news, you know, became a channel that had to appease advertisers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's money involved, and then all of a sudden there's you have to have a narrative that fits with the people who are giving you money. You're no longer presenting the news, you're presenting what makes the people who give you money happy. And then of course you're going to sensationalize it and, you know, make it sound crazy so people stay engaged. There's such a short attention span of, you know, what Americans actually will, you know, like you on Facebook, for instance, how many times have you seen someone post something with a link attached because it has a sensationalized headline in the news article? But then if you actually take the time to read the news article, what the person posted about is kind of debunked in the news article. It just has a crazy headline. And you're like, well, if you would have you just read a headline, you didn't even take the time to read the article. They're just like, oh, that headline says that. So that's fact now forever.
Well, it's just confirmation bias. You just go, hey, I agree with this thing. I hope it's real. So I'm going to share it in hopes that sharing it somehow makes it a reality.
Yeah.
And people are too lazy to read an entire article. I am. I know, like, halfway through, I'm just like, all right, I get the gist. Cool. Enough information. Move on.
Right.
I'll maybe reference part of this, but I'm probably a part of the problem.
Well, it's very telling just in our social media, whereas, like, we went from Facebook where you could, you know, post these long posts. Then Twitter forms were like, okay, now it's just like 160 characters or whatever. And then Instagram is like, I just want to see a fucking picture of whatever you do. And that's all I need. I don't want any words anymore.
I mean, I've definitely been paying way more attention to Instagram lately because I don't have to deal with just weird bombastic shit. Like, I don't know. Like, it boggles my mind how many people think that everyone wants to hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
Or just like, I saw a thing. It made sense to me. I'm going to say it again. You're like, you said a version of that yesterday.
Right.
How many times do you need to scream this? Like, we get it. You don't like Trump. Or we get it. You like Trump. It's just like, yo, you guys, this is not doing anything except for you just going pat on the back. I'm going to jerk off. Everyone's going to go, ah, I jerk off like that too.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the easiest thing is people are like, I'm going to forget his name. There's a comedian that came through a couple months ago in Spokane, and he had one of the best lines I'd heard. He was talking about Trump, and he's like, Trump's like a WWE wrestler, you know, and he's going on and on. He's painting this analogy. He goes, Trump has a lot of fans, not a lot of supporters. He's like, a fan buys your merch. A supporter, you know, will make calls for you. And I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm like, that's kind of the way things have gone in general with politics, where it's, you know, these identity politics and like people want to just kind of latch on to one team, carte blanche, you know, blindly toe the line, just like, this is it forever, you know, because it makes it in that, and then they want to loudly shout it, and anything else, facts, evidence, nuance, have just gone completely out the window.
Well, it's also because like some core issues are tied to certain political parties.
Yeah.
Like the right to choose, like that is tied to political parties and just a lot of things like that. It's because we only have two parties, man. It's like it's just separated, and it's kind of hard to not choose teams. Like I'm not a Republican. I'm a left leaning dude, and I would have a hard time voting Republican because of the tenets of that party.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I know that means I'm a part of the problem, but it's like, yo, man, there's some things that I'm gonna have to side. I might have to vote for an accused rapist,
right?
Just because I don't want the other guy to win,
right? Which is such a horrible circumstance we've put ourselves in. Because I mean, I'm definitely more left leaning, also, but I don't. Neither party represents me as a whole. Like I can't get on board with some ideas on the left. There's some ideas the right has that I'm like, oh, yeah, I get that, you know. And then there's some stuff that I'm like, ah, oh, that's pretty fucking nuts. so it's a difficult time. And I just, you know, some nuance would be nice. The ability to I've always said, like, I don't have a lot of super strong beliefs. I have like ideas and things that kind of like are currently my ideals. But I'm always open to new ideas. So when new information comes or society changes, things change, it's like, okay, yeah, that makes a little sense. That's my new ideal until I get a better idea. You know, I'm not like, this is my belief. This is it. I will never change my mind. I'm like dogmatically, staunchly stuck in this idea forever.
Yeah, that's I do think that is and I mean, the argument could be made that I'm just bashing the other team because it's not my team, but that feels like a very religious thing, and religious people tend to be more right wing. And because, like, in my opinion, like, religion looks to the past for answers,
yeah,
and science looks to the future, and trying to figure out new ways to solve problems feels like the right way to do things to me. Like,
yeah,
sure. Oh, this group of people finally have a voice to say they don't like how this thing is handled. Maybe we should adapt this, the way we all interact, to appease them so that as a group, as a whole, we do better, instead of going, no, you need to shut the fuck up and do what we do because that's how I was raised. And you're like, that's not
how it works.
Not everyone has to be you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always said that zealousy in any forum is dangerous, whether it's for religion or a political party or even a sports team. You know, I mean, like, I grew up in LA in the 80s. I'm a diehard Lakers guy. You will never, ever see me wear a piece of Lakers, like, paraphernalia. Never. I just like, yeah, it's my team. I love them. I don't need to, like, have the matching sweatsuit and cod piece to let everyone know I'm a fucking Lakers fan. Like, I can go to the games and cheer them on and without, without dressing up in a costume for it, you know.
How would we know if you were wearing the codpiece,
though? Well, I like to wear it on the outside to so people know. Yeah, obviously, that's, you know, people need to see my prodigious sack pressing through the codpiece. So, all right, let's. How long have we been on here? About an hour. All right. So a couple more things, real quick, then we'll get out of here. I got. We'll let you get on your night. There's been a rash of pretty crazy things happening outside of politics and the coronavirus and Tiger King. Any thoughts on the idea that, like, things are falling apart rapidly? We've had a mass amount of earthquakes, they say the sun is like in this phase where it's, we'll have like no sunspots virtually for years, and there's going to be mass famine. The polar magnitude just changed on Earth. So all these meteorites are getting through the solar system, like in crashing to Earth. Does it seem like things are just falling apart and we're all going to die soon?
I mean, you know the saying, things happen in 7,032.
Yeah, that'll, yep. My grandpa always said that. Yep.
Yeah. I think I saw an article about the polls doing something, and I didn't click on it because I didn't feel like just adding another log on the anxiety fire.
Sure.
And I figured if it was that real, there'd be more articles popping up on Reddit. I don't know, man. I also think that we seek out similar things. And I do think climate change is real. And if you don't, fuck all the way up. Hop in your gas guzzling vehicle, close the garage door, and leave it on for a fucking while. Like, I'm like, dinosaurs, you're holding us back. Climate change is real, and we need to adjust to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, we're very aware of all our mistakes. And I think we're having to pay. We're seeing that we're going to have to pay that price as a species. We've been mistreating the planet for so long. And then all this other weird shit happens. We have the science to detect these things. I'm sure things like this have happened in recent history, like the poles doing something weird or meteorites or something, but we weren't aware. We have more ability to see how fucked we are potentially fucked we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have systems in place where the information of how fucked we're gonna be leads to clicks, which leads to ad money, which leads to hysteria, which it just perpetuates itself.
Sure. Yeah. Well, did you see did you not read the article about how NASA said they thought they found a parallel universe that runs backwards from ours?
I saw that, but I was like, why am I gonna click on that? Because that can't be real.
Yeah, what am I going to get? I tried to read it like 8 times, and then my friend was like, what are you reading? And I told her the headline. She's like, oh, like how? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, I'm reading the article. I don't know. Like, I can read you what they say, but I don't understand it. They're talking about these particles from the Big Bang that go one way, but they're finding them to go the other way now. And that I'm like, I guess. I don't know what it means.
I mean, that's cool, and I'm glad someone is doing things like that, but I'm also like, yo, we have actual problems,
right? Yeah.
Could someone who is obviously way smarter than me or most of us work on those, please? Us peasants want to get back to normal,
right? I want to do calm. I want to say my yuck yucks again.
Yeah. Give me- I need to yell and make bird sounds at strangers until I'm happy about myself.
Yeah, until I feel validated enough to go to sleep tonight. Yeah, well, hopefully soon. Hopefully soon, man. All right. Why don't, if you shout out, tell everyone where they can find you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. And then also give us that link one more time for your show tonight and every Wednesday that you're doing.
Yeah, just look me up. Luke Severide, LukeSeveride. It's like the word severed, but with an I before the D, like Luke Skywalker. He lost his hand. Anyways, I hate Star Wars jokes, as I make one. Yeah, but the show is going to be every Wednesday. If you find me on Facebook, I'll be posting the link. It's Money in the Bank Productions. And yeah, it'll be fun. Just come hang out. It's a free show. Hopefully, if we do well enough, we'll get sponsors and maybe be able to give free stuff out. But we also want audience interaction. We'll be live. Going to have some comics on. I'll have Deese on in the future. I only have like 2 weeks booked out now. So we'll see where it goes. Get you on there. And,
I'm pretty available, yeah. Turns out.
Yeah,
I kind of
figured.
Okay, one last question, because this is a debate my buddy and I have been having. And I want your take. What is the most deadly animal that you think you could take in a fight to the death? And not like, not in it, not, you know, I mean, don't, you know, I, we're let's not do the, you know, no clever, like, oh, just the human being or like not like a ball python that's obviously deadly or like, you know. I mean, mosquitoes kill more people every year than most of you, but you know what I'm saying. Like a real predator. What do you think
okay,
you could
take? Okay, so you're asking a comedian and telling them they just can't be clever.
No, don't be funny. No. This is a prey. You can, be clever if you want, but realistically, what do you think?
Realistically?
What do you think you could take? Because this was a real conversation we had. We debated for literally days. this went on.
No tools? Just
no
bare
tools,
hands.
Bare hands.
Okay, my first thought is baby hippo.
Okay.
Because hippos are deadly.
They are deadly.
Baby hippos, adorable.
Yeah, how do you feel good?
Also, I was like, very thick neck, yeah. Very thick neck.
Tell me you're going to feel good about yourself and be able to go to sleep knowing you kicked a baby hippo to death earlier that day.
I don't think it matters if I can go to sleep. I'm sure many other people will not let me go to sleep.
Yeah, you're like, this is a zoo, Luke.
I was like, I had to settle an argument between two friends. Yeah. I'm not even one of them. I don't know. I think like a bobcat, maybe. I don't know. Like if you can get a good. But then again, like cats, man, they're so fast.
Yeah, yeah. Bobcats. Like, So I landed on coyote.
Coyote. Yeah, I was thinking about dogs because dogs, if they bite, if they get a chomp on you, yeah, you might bleed out at some point, but that's their only
right.
Real...
Yeah.
So like they just got but if you just like throat punch for a while,
yeah, you can choke them out maybe.
Yeah, choke them out. Also, how terrifying would it be if like you know how like house cats like you also have like lions. Like, what if, like, regular dogs, we had the version of that, like, the same size difference? Sorry, this is just
not. No, God. Yeah.
And wolves are huge, but a wolf is, like, the size of a bobcat compared to a, like, house cat.
Right. Yeah, they're big, but they're, you know, I mean, compared to, like, a mastiff or something, they're, you know, not.
Yeah, about the same size. Like, a wolf that standing would be, like, 8 feet tall. That would be the equivalent of, like, a tiger.
Like a dire wolf.
Yeah, dire wolf plus a foot.
Yeah, geez. My buddy was convinced he could. He was arguing that he could take a mountain lion, and
How heavy is he?
What's that?
How heavy is he?
How heavy is he? He's like 170. Yeah, I told him like there's no way. I said there's no fucking way
at all. Like, in the amount of, like, I don't know how much a mountain lion weighs, but I know it's probably 150 plus. And probably way more. It's probably, like, 300 pounds or something crazy. But, like, the amount of muscle on those things, like, it is meant to survive. What does your buddy do for a living?
Does
he ever kill his prey with his bare hands?
Not so far. No, okay. Not. He's unemployed, former bartender. He was convinced he could take a cougar, and I'm like, dude, those things. They're about 180 pounds. Okay, a male, but they're all muscle, and it's the agility of a cougar too. Cause they come at you, even if you like a dog, like you said, they bite your arm, like a, you know, they still, their back claws are going to come around and now start gutting you, razor sharp talons on the back. Yeah. So I'm like, dude, no way. Bobcat. I think you can take a bobcat cause they're small. I mean, they're agile, but they're small too. I mean, they're like,
maybe dude, have you ever taken on a house cat?
I mean, they're white. Yeah. Cats are the meanest. If cats were a little, I mean,
bigger. We would put them in cages and then do meth and fuck dudes in the ass.
Yeah.
I think we already saw that.
They made a documentary about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's
is that how Tiger King started this conversation?
Maybe it's just two gay guys meth now being like, I mean, it's like, hey, what's the biggest, most dangerous animal you think we could have sex underneath? He's like,
alligators are in the mix.
Yeah. Oh shit. That's one of my buddies said an alligator too. He could take an alligator. I'm like, I go, yeah, but like also, at least with something like, I said, like maybe a kangaroo, because I feel like I could choke it out. But I don't know. I couldn't choke out a fucking crocodile. Like I wouldn't even know where to start.
I think with the angle of attack, a crocodile would be easier. Because, I mean, we've all seen videos of that. I mean, I'm not saying that makes us experts, but like as soon as their mouth's closed, they can't do anything.
Yeah.
And like they could death roll on you, but as long as you have a good time. We say this like as if, when's the last time you wrestled a person?
Yeah, I wrestled my dog. I mean, she's pretty big, but
yeah, she's pretty jacked. But like, she's got some muscles.
But yeah, I mean, she's also, she probably goes easy on me too. I don't think she's going. Yeah. I don't think she's going full bore. I think if she did, she could easily kill me if she wanted to. And she's only like 95 pounds, so
at double that, and then claws,
right, and only surviving, only like literally killing their prey to survive.
You wouldn't even be the second thing it had, the first thing it had murdered that day,
right? Yeah. I there were some guy got killed by a mountain lion a couple days ago in Washington State. This is two guys biking, and they were they saw it kind of stalking them, and they tried to scare it off, and it kept following them and attacked one of the guys and killed him. So Jesus. Yeah, pretty crazy, pretty rare, because usually they don't even hunt people, or they're not even out during the day. They're, you know, generally nocturnal. So, but yeah, I would never want to meet a mountain lion. That sounds scary as shit.
I'm good.
All right. Well, on that note, guys, we are going to get out of here. Go follow Luke Severide. We'll put links in the comments section of this episode so you can find him. Check out his show tonight if you're listening to this as it comes out, and every Wednesday on at Money in the Bank Productions. If you follow him, you'll get all the details though. And then as for me, guys, again, we're going to try and make this probably a couple days a week on the podcast. You can watch the Social Minute every Monday, and we've got a couple more projects coming to give you more entertainment online. Until then, follow Luke and check out his show, and hope to see you soon, buddy. Hopefully we can actually do this in real life and do comedy together again in person, and not have a risk of dying soon.
Yeah, I mean, no more than usual. Just depends on what sort of animals we have to fight that night.
Yeah, how crazy we get. So, hey, that's new show, comics, tell jokes, and then they have to fight a deadly animal, and then tell jokes again. That's whoever survived. We heard it here. Don't let anyone steal it. I'll give you a 49-51 percentage on it just because you were here. All right, good to see you, buddy, and take care, and I'll talk to you soon. And now for my weekly apologies. I'd like to apologize to Gay Meth Addicts, Asians, Open Mic Comics, Safeway, comedy clubs who've hired me, sports fans, and people who've fought cougars. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.